Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Obama supporter Dan Johnson Weinberger, Clinton supporter Richard Boykin, McCain supporter Chris Roebling, and television documentarian Brian Boyer. Our program tonight, coming from our home base on State Street, that great street in Chicago, where phone lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, our email address is btbtalk@aol.com. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, www.beyondthebeltway.com. Tonight, for the next couple of hours, we have lots to talk about. It's been a very, very busy week in the world of politics. And the big news today coming out of Puerto Rico is that Hillary Clinton, as expected, won big in the Democratic primary battle, the primary that went on in Puerto Rico today, picking up over 61% of the vote. It looks as though projections suggest that she's going to pick up 28 additional delegates. Barack Obama, however, will pick up about 14, so his delegate count keeps going up and up. And of course, this comes in the wake of a decision yesterday by the Rules Committee, the Democratic National Committee, to take a look at Michigan and Florida, the two contested states, and they're giving each of the delegates in those states a half a vote, and that is viewed by the Obama campaign, I guess, as somewhat of a victory, and the Clinton campaign not too happy about it. Richard Boykin joins us. Richard, nice to have you with us.
Thank you.
Representing the Clinton campaign and a longtime supporter of also Congressman Danny Davis, where you were his chief of staff, a Democrat from the city of Chicago. You still believe, I'm asking you this as a question, do you still believe that Hillary Clinton can pull this off?
I still believe that there is a chance because, first of all, I want to congratulate Senator Clinton on winning Puerto Rico big. I think at last look, 85% of the vote was in, and she had 68% of the vote to Senator Obama's 32%. So I want to congratulate her. I still believe there's an opportunity for her to win this nomination because at the end of this, at the end of the contest on June 3rd, neither one of them will have reached the magic number, which is now 2118 of delegates needed to clinch the nomination. And so what will have to happen is that the superdelegates or automatic delegates will have to make a determination as to which one of these candidates is going to be the strongest in November.
Dan Johnson Weinberger also joins us. He is supporting Barack Obama. Dan, nice to have you with us.
Great to be here. Thanks, Bruce.
When you hear the Clinton people still thinking that there's a way to do it for Hillary Clinton, how does it make you feel?
Well, they can keep hope alive. You know, it's fine to have a sliver of hope, but I think by this time next week, I think Barack will have secured a majority of delegates. I think most pundits agree. And although there's a slight possibility, a mathematical probability, that a whole bunch of delegates can change their mind, it's almost a certainty that Barack Obama will be our nominee.
By the way, let's take a look at some of the numbers right now. These are the Democratic delegates. Obama with pledged delegates, 1,728 and a half. Superdelegates, 327. He now has 2,055 and a half. Hillary Clinton, 1,587. 293 superdelegates for a total of 1,880 insofar as delegates. By the way, you see that 2118 is the new number. That was based on the decision by the Rules Committee yesterday when they went to half delegates. And by the way, those figures do not include the suspected 28 that Hillary Clinton will pick up today and 14 that Barack Obama will pick up today in Puerto Rico. Brian Boyer, you're our television documentarian. You've worked for Republicans, Democrats, Independents. In this particular campaign, is it all over for Hillary Clinton? And the results, as they keep coming in, with the last several weeks being very positive for Hillary Clinton, is this, in your view, ensuring her a spot on that ticket?
No, but, you know, she intends to fight for a spot on the ticket no matter what, and she had the misfortune. Everybody has a misfortune in presidential politics. She had the misfortune of speaking the truth when she intimated that something terrible could happen to Barack. And behind closed doors, that's subject number one among a lot of people, and there's a lot of fear. And as long as Hillary is close, as long as Hillary is not out of the picture, whether it's as a candidate or a vice presidential candidate with Barack or as vice president of the United States, you can be sure the Clinton people have that thought in the back of their minds, and Hillary has it in the front of her mind.
Chris Roebling is a Republican. He supports John McCain, also a political operative of note. The actions of Hillary Clinton, the fact that she's showing this feisty, determined manner, and obviously, voters have had an opportunity to either accept that or reject it in the last several, actually month and a half. They've been accepting it. Are the people now pushing her towards a spot on that ticket? Is Obama going to be able to withstand the growing pressure to add her to that ticket?
I think that Hillary Clinton is an enormous force on the floor of that convention. And I don't know if Hillary has actually herself personally decided that the best place for her and her future is to seek and accept the vice presidential nomination. But with this split of delegates and with the fact that, according to her math, she has received a greater number of the popular votes than has Senator Obama, you have
by
to,
counting Michigan
by
and
counting
Florida.
The Michigan and Florida
and not you the have, caucuses.
And she has her way of doing it, and her people
Clinton math
that way.
Says
so Clinton math says that.
Right, right.
But in any case, on the floor of that convention in Denver, her forces, her supporters are going to be very significant, and they're not going to be ignored, and they're not going to be set aside. It's not going to be some sort of coronation where she will be marginalized. So I don't know if the non-marginalization of Hillary transforms itself into taking the vice presidential spot or if it turns into something else, but she is a major force. And I want two other quick points. A, she has been doing very well lately, and she's been winning all of the big states, and she has done very well with Hispanics. So the party has got a real mess on its hands.
Here's the question.
That's what I'm saying.
Here's the question. Is Hillary, the weatherman of 1968, born again at the Democratic National Convention?
In what way?
Well, I mean, the weatherman had a political agenda, and the battle in 1968 politically at the Democratic National Convention was between the moderates and the radicals. There's no question about that. They each had their own candidates. If Hillary and her people are there as insurgents, it's going to tear the party apart, and I guarantee the next president will not be.
But are they the insurgents who are the more moderates?
Aren't they the insurgent
moderates?
Well, emotionally, they're not moderate. And I was really struck at the vehement emotions that Hillary supporters displayed yesterday. I was dumbfounded.
It's
about democracy. Let me say that some people say Clinton math, but there have been a number of major networks, including ABC, who've confirmed the math. And I think that math was confirmed on yesterday by the Democratic Committee's endorsement of seating these delegates.
I want to follow up on that. I want to talk about that math. And again, the question I want to ask to the audience, in your view, has Hillary Clinton, through her guts and her determination and also the way that she's running in the Democratic primary, has she assured herself a place on the ticket? You can argue that she still can win it, be in the top spot. My question to you, is she going to be on that ticket? 1-800-723-8289. Back shortly.
You've heard the horror stories about meth. It's a powerful, dangerous, and highly addictive drug that's having a serious impact on our communities and horrible effects on families across the country. But there is reason for hope. Treatment for meth addiction is available, and it works. All it takes is someone to care. If you know someone using meth, get involved and help them get on the path to recovery. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go Red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go Red!
To Go Red for Women and give your heart the love it deserves.
From Fresno, California to Fayetteville, North Carolina, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. We're going to take calls and answer, give you an opportunity to respond to the question, do you think Hillary Clinton has talked her way and fought her way onto the Democratic ticket? Richard Boykin, I know you want her in the top spot. I know you want that. You've made that clear. But...
Well, let me tell you, I'm a Democrat, first of all.
I know that.
And I'm going to support the nominee. But I believe that Senator Clinton has performed fantastic throughout this process. And I think as the process has gone on, you've seen the strength of Senator Clinton really come forth. She has secured more votes, when you look at the numbers, than anybody else in presidential politics history running in a primary. She has over 17 million votes.
All right, Dan, yeah. Johnson Weinberger, doesn't that case make it absolutely impossible for Barack Obama not to at least offer her the opportunity to
be the
running?
Well, let me just say one quick thing. The fallacy behind Senator Clinton, who's run a fantastic campaign and would make a great president, but the fallacy behind what she's saying, that she got more votes than Barack, is that she doesn't count caucuses at all. Because in a caucus, of course, you don't take a government ballot.
For the sake of the let's take the mathematics off the table.
Okay.
Because whichever math you believe, it's only a few hundred votes, okay?
Yeah.
Numbers.
So it's essentially
so my question to you is,
yes,
has she earned her way to at least be offered the vice presidential opportunity?
I will say I don't think that's the right way to think about who the vice presidential candidate ought to be, whether she's earned her way in or not. I think...
What should it be?
Just like Senator Clinton is saying, who's the most electable candidate? Well, part of the reason why Barack has attracted the biggest grassroots political army in presidential history is because he's for change. He's for turning the page on a lot of the politics, which, you know, George Bush and some of the Clintons, a lot of the Democrats found, you know, we can move beyond.
I'm using your argument against you here.
Yeah.
If almost the same amount are voting for her, aren't they sending the signal, we want her. We want Hillary Clinton, and when you want to win an election, you should be taking your two strongest candidates, because where she's strong, he's weak, and vice versa.
That's
so why would he not offer the opportunity to run to her.
The only reason he shouldn't offer it is if there's a political weakness to attract independents and Republicans who might vote for Barack, who for whatever reason don't vote for McCain, that would hurt the ticket.
If there's Obama trapped,
if Hillary
Brian.
Is the strongest
Obama,
candidate,
Obama
then he
is
should.
Absolutely
but I don't
trapped.
Think she is.
I said on this show more than 3 months ago that
yes,
the ticket
did.
Was going to be Obama, Clinton. I said it then. I'll say it again. The political calculus can't be escaped. It's a certainty.
Yeah, I think the fact that Dan's having trouble with this is illustrative of the problem of the party. And I say this as someone who grew up in the Democratic Party and left it to become a Republican. But the fact is that you have got the party with two very distinct wings right now. And I'm not saying ideologically, because I think they're on ideology probably about 95% the same. But just the personalities and the dynamism, and you're talking about the young people who've come out for Barack. You know, we had a situation in 1972 when I was still a Democrat. George McGovern got nominated. He had not received the most number of votes. I'm not contesting the election. He had not received, but he had motivated the kids. And the kids came out like crazy, and McGovern went nowhere in the general election. You might want to say anything about Nixon and about Watergate, but the fact is McGovern went nowhere. I think he carried three states or whatever, four states. And what you are looking at today, if there is not some very deft political leadership between now and Denver, you are looking at a possibility in which not the core group, not the people like Richard here who are going to vote for the Republic or vote for the Democratic nominee, whoever that person is, you're looking at people who are going to be turned off. And if Barack cannot solve a problem with Reverend Wright, and he can't solve a problem with Michael Flager, and he has to walk away from his church for 20 years, and he's afraid of going on a debate hosted by Brit Hume, I'm not buying the fact he's got the political skill to reconcile his own party, let
so the
alone
guy
the
that
electorate
just,
and the country.
The guy that just won the Democratic primary, you don't think it's political
Barack
skill?
For Father Flager. Come on.
That's coming up in the next beyond. Segment. We're going to calls. Fairfax, Virginia. Deborah is listening to us on XM Radio tonight. Go ahead. Deborah, are you there? Deborah, are you there? No, Deborah's not there. How about Sam? Are you there? Sam in Hinsdale, Illinois.
Yeah, hi, Bruce. As for your question, yes, Hillary is fighting hard, but, you know, it's the wrong place, wrong time. The place where she should have fought hard was when Bush was doing what his press secretary now says is propaganda for invading Iraq.
Well, Sam, then you know, Sam, that's yesterday's argument. She should have done it, and a lot of Democrats are voting for her. So I'm not so sure that, you know, people are not, people know that. South Elgin, Illinois is the place. WLS is the station. Jim is the caller. Go ahead.
Good evening. As everybody recalls, the Rose Law Firm billing records and FBI files were found in the private section of the White House. Just they mysteriously kind of floated in there. So given the fact that the Clintons have proven themselves to be unscrupulous people, I wouldn't be surprised to see them pull a rabbit out of the hat, so to speak, with some of the information they've gathered from some of their sources. And what do you think that might be, and how do you think it'll be used against Barack?
Well, one of the stories was that, and again, we're going to talk about it more in the next half hour, about Barack Obama's decision to resign from his church. There has been some speculation that there may be other inflammatory tapes that were about to surface. That's part of the rumor that's out there, and that may have led to this decision. So maybe there are other shoes to fall.
But, you know, the Clinton campaign has been saying for a long time that there are shoes to drop imminently, and I do not take the position that she's run a great campaign, frankly, and I'm not crazy about Barack's, but I think Hillary took about 3 or 4 months to figure out how to run against Barack Obama. Right. And after she got there, and that was about, I don't know, 60, 80 days ago, then she started running a good campaign. That's my analysis. But they have always been saying, oh, there's something about to come out. There's something, different things circulating on YouTube and the internet. They've never shown up. I mean, I think there's a lot about Barack that's still to come out with that the Republicans are going to put out.
So you don't think you don't think Reverend Wright could have been one of the things they were talking about?
Well, I don't think they knew that Reverend Wright. I don't think that the Clinton people got Reverend Wright to buy a ticket and fly down to the National Press Club and make a spectacle of himself.
I want to ask Richard a question. Yeah. Richard, by the way, for those listening around the country, is an African American. And you are a supporter of Hillary Clinton.
Right.
You are also a minister.
Right.
You know politics in Chicago. You know the politics of clergy in Chicago. Within the black community, I want you to bring everybody into where you think what's going, what's being said within the black community in responding to this question. Where do those in the black community feel the stories about Reverend Wright came from? Where do they think those stories came from? Who do they think is fanning those stories?
Well, obviously, Bruce, there are a number of people who suggest that they came from the Clinton campaign. They suggest that they came from the Republicans. But I will assure you of this, that Clinton had nothing to do with it. Because if she had, she would have. It probably would have been released a lot earlier than when it came. And I just don't think that the Clintons play that kind of politics.
Within the see if you can. This is going to be a great challenge of your integrity now, because I'm going to ask you a question, and I'm going to ask if you can share with us very candidly. What has been the reaction in the black community to Barack Obama's movement away from Reverend Wright? It's been too quick to judge his resignation from the church yesterday. But over the last several months, when Reverend Wright has been a political albatross around his neck, he has moved further and further away from Reverend Wright. What are the folks back home in that church, in the black community of Chicago, how are they responding to that distancing of himself from Reverend Wright?
I think there's a mixed response. I think in the church itself, in Trinity, I think some people are sad about it, and they're sad to see two strong, powerful African-American men at odds with each other, almost, if you will, divided from one another. The mainstream African-American, if you will, who doesn't attend Trinity, says, hey, Barack has to do what he has to do, and this guy acting the way he's acting will not get him elected to the Democratic nomination to the White House.
I want to get Dan's reaction to that. Not that you can speak for the black community, nor could Richard, but Richard may have a more unique perspective.
I what I've heard from some, in my perspective, is some of the legislators in Springfield that, you know, attend the Trinity Church or where they, I sense, just my read, I sense a bit of a weary resignation, that's one of the things that you kind of have to do. I don't sense that people see it as some sort of a cultural betrayal by Senator Obama, but rather a sort of sense that the cultural gap that Barack was talking about between your typical black church and your typical white church, you know, that's certainly been expressed with Trinity, and how black churches, typically there's more of a call for social justice than most white churches are comfortable with. And as the extremes of that came out in the YouTube clips, I just sense sort of a resignation that, well, it's not a cultural fight that Barack should have to take on. And so it's sad and it's kind of too bad that he's got to resign from the church, but he's got bigger fish to fry. But I don't sense sort of anger or hostility towards it. I just sense a sort of resignation.
Well, obviously the publicity about Reverend Wright, not only the initial sermons, but then the speech to the National Press Club, has made him a significant factor in this campaign. And again, the other controversial pastor or religious leader from Chicago, Father Michael Flager, he has been front and center. We're going to hear from him on tape, and we're going to talk about him and the decision by Barack Obama to leave his church and the ramifications all that will have on campaign 2008. 1-800-723-8029. I'm Bruce Dumont, live from Chicago. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415. For a one-time professional fee, American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415. From Seattle, Washington to Boston, Massachusetts, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Our Obama supporter is Dan Johnson Weinberger. He is a political progressive and runs his own public affairs and consulting lobbying firm. Brian Boyer also joins us. He is a noted television documentarian. Also with us this evening is Chris Roebling. Chris Roebling is a supporter of John McCain. And Richard Boykin is here. He's a supporter of Hillary Clinton and used to be chief of staff for Congressman Danny Davis. He's now an attorney in private practice. We have lots of callers on the line. Let's go to them right now. Let's go to Dennis in, is it Reduso, New Mexico?
That's a good try.
Listen to us on XM Radio. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you. I'm enjoying your program. It's very even-handed, and I appreciate that. Here's what I think. I'm a registered Democrat, never voted other than Democrat for president. But if Barack Obama is on the ticket, even with Hillary Clinton as vice president, I don't think they're going to be able to carry the bulk of the Democratic voters and get the turnout. All the white-collar voters have come out in droves in the larger states. And I will say this, I would consider voting for Senator McCain if he had Colin Powell on the ticket. And I talked to some Republicans about this, influential in New Mexico, and they say that's not going to happen. But that's just the way I feel. And I just don't think there's too many skeletons in the closet for Obama, and I think some of them are going to come out, and I think if the Republicans are going to have a heyday with it. And I think it's going to go straight to the convention. And I think they're going to have to put Hillary in there in order to make a run at it. That's just what I feel.
Dan Johnson Weinberger.
I would say this. I think the decision as to whether we have a divided convention or whether it's all wrapped up in a week is going to be made by Senator Clinton.
And I disagree with you.
Let me make my point. I think my prediction is within the next week, under pressure from Speaker Pelosi and Majority Leader Reid, almost all superdelegates will make their decision. Because at that point, we know everything we need to know.
No, I disagree with you. My
final point, and then okay. I appreciate it. I think Rahm Emanuel said it best. And the loser of the primary will decide who the winner of the presidential of the November election will be. And if it turns out that Hillary turns out to be in second place in this nomination process, she'll decide, not Barack, but she'll decide whether we have the strongest ticket possible and we win in November.
It's very interesting that you raised the Rahm Emanuel's name. You know, Rahm Emanuel is an enormously powerful congressman, and he's an enormously powerful insider and a man who wields a lot of influence. And what Rahm finally decides is the way an awful lot of the superdelegates and others are going to go. He will be one of the people.
What evidence do we have that he's moved any superdelegates in the last 3 months? And why would they follow him before they would follow Nancy Pelosi?
Why? Because he is a person of tremendous influence. A lot of people are afraid of him.
But who was he moved? Who was he moved in the last couple of months?
Oh, I don't know. I can't answer that.
I don't think he's moved many people.
Especially what he's going to do.
My point is this, is that Senator Clinton has been the strongest candidate in the last few months on the Democratic side. She's won more votes than Senator Obama. She's winning the traditional Democratic.
But in your view, should she demand to be on the ticket? Because
she's winning the traditional Democratic base, senior citizens. She's winning women.
I know, but
she's winning
Richard, these are all the obvious things. Should she be on the ticket? What are you arguing?
There is no question. I think she's earned actually being asked to be on this ticket.
Do you think she's going to be asked?
Do
you think she's going to be asked?
I don't think any of us know if Barack Obama has got the political guts and leadership skills to figure that one out. This is a guy who thinks we have 57 states.
Oh, come on.
That's why I'm asking you.
You're better than that, Chris. You are better than that.
I want to tell you, if we were talking about a conservative Republican who went out and said, you know, I've been working so hard, I wanted to go to Alaska. Why? My staff said I couldn't go, but we have been to 57 states. Even though that was an offhand, slighted remark, that would have gone on for 18 days.
Back to the point.
Myth of the liberal media.
In your view, will Obama ask her? Yes or no?
I honestly don't think he has the guts to do it. No, I don't think he has the political skill. Because I don't think we're dealing with somebody who is ready to lead a party.
Let's talk about political skill based on the last caller. The Democrats are going to make their choice, for vice president first. If Hillary Clinton ends up on that ticket as a running mate for Barack Obama, does that force John McCain to do anything?
I think the Republican, the John McCain situation is somebody who is immediately qualified to become president because of the age situation. Number two, probably somebody who is outside of Washington just to differentiate himself and the ticket from Washington. And number three, probably somebody who is linked up to a swing state. So whether it's Minnesota with Pawlenty or Ohio with Rob Portman or Michigan with John Engler, I mean, I think we're looking at people, or Pennsylvania with Tom Ridge, I think we're looking at people like that. And I think there is a growing movement on the Republican side to have McCain names or to urge McCain to name somebody sooner rather than later to start to define the Republican alternative.
Bruce,
I'm
surprised.
Let's go to Rick in Columbia, Missouri, listening to us on XM Radio. You're on the air. Are you there? Go ahead, Rick.
I'm here. Hello.
Yes,
hello.
You're on the air.
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry I couldn't hear if I was on or not. Loving the show a lot right here. I just want to say, in my mind, the Democratic Party wouldn't be in this jam to begin with if their house is organized to begin with. We've got two states that right now are being counted in a half-vote position. That is outrageous. How in the world this party can call itself organized and deserving to represent the American people right now is beyond me at this point.
Rick, what would you have done with Michigan and Florida?
Rerun the election. They had that choice, Rick. One at a time.
Wait. Let me orchestrate, please. It's my show.
Right.
Rick, you talk.
Okay. My point in this is, if the job is worth doing, it's the thing right. We're talking about the leadership of this country being taken possession by somebody who's getting one hell of a handoff courtesy of our current leader. And that person, we have got to get this right. The reason you heard so much emotion at that little council meeting they held, this half-vote position they're taking right there, is because the people's will has accurately reflected. Two states basically jumped off sides. The Democratic Party failed to oversight this thing. what is the deal with these guys the way they're running? And insofar as the question whether Hillary should be on the ticket or not, heck yes, she should be on the ticket right there. Look at all the states where she whooped on Obama. It's going to come through in the general election, and it cannot be ignored. Like it or not, she better be on that ticket, or she's going to have problems. And the question is,
let's let Brian, he's going to jump
Will
in for a second.
Will Rogers said, I don't belong to any organized political party. I'm a Democrat. There's no change here.
Yeah,
we're going to move on. We got to move on. Let's go to we're going to go to Leeper, Michigan. Larry, also listening to us on XM. Is it Leeper or Leper?
It's Lapeer.
Lapeer, okay.
Lapeer,
we know there are no lepers in Michigan. Go ahead.
No, not for a couple centuries anyway. All right, listen. I think first off. Your Hillary supporter there, I am total agreement with you. I think she is by far and above the better candidate.
Thank you.
That being said, Barack very remiss in not taking this woman, the way she's campaigned and the way she carries the union households, the tradespeople, the plant factory workers, the older folks, the middle-income folks. She has carried them in all the states, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania. I mean, look, guys, Barack needs to take this pick very seriously or he will stand a chance of getting a backfire against him over that, no matter how gracious Hillary is in not accepting or getting the nomination.
Let's let Dan Johnson-Weinberger respond to that.
Let me just say two things. One is Senator Clinton has made it very clear we're going to have a unified party as soon as a nominee is chosen. I take her at her word. And I think Senator Obama said the same thing. I take them at their word. The second thing is
they all say that.
They do, and I believe it. But this absurd idea that Barack Obama doesn't have political skill, if we think about a year ago when it was inevitable that Senator Clinton was going to be the nominee, to somehow figure out how to find 1.5 million people to contribute to a campaign, to beat the inevitable, as it was called at the time, the Clinton machine, and to be on the cusp of winning the Democratic nomination, it takes enormous political skill that we haven't seen in a long time to pull that off.
And without telling anyone what you're running for.
Let me ask the follow-up. The follow-up would be, though, that isn't the end goal.
No.
The end goal is to be president of the United States.
You're correct.
And the reality is, I agree with you. I think he ran a flawless campaign up until the time that the right information hit, and then I think that the campaign has had a hard time recover from that.
Okay.
But my question to you right now is, now you're looking at a different set of numbers.
Yeah.
Doesn't he need her to bring the coalition together to get to 270 electoral votes? Isn't that the only real issue that's left?
It is the only real issue that's left. And the question is, does she help win states that he couldn't otherwise win? Clearly, in the Democratic primary,
she's the one who won California. She's the one who won Ohio and Texas.
Obama would win those.
Of course, we're going to win California. The question is, would you win more states with Clinton or with somebody else? Because there is a downside to Hillary Clinton. It's true, right? There are some voters that might be attracted to Barack that wouldn't if Hillary was on
the ticket.
I'm going
to give you a chance to respond to that, but we do have to pause. 1-800-723-8289. When we come back, you'll hear from Michael Flager on tape.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit SCORE.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. This is Chicago, where we're home to a lot of controversial religious leaders. One is Father Michael Flager. Now, if you live in Chicago, you know that Father Michael Flager is a controversial figure, has been a controversial figure for a long time. Many people around the country listening and watching know that he is now a controversial figure from coast to coast, or at least insofar as the national news media is concerned. Last Sunday, Father Flager, who is a Roman Catholic, was invited to go to Trinity United Church of Christ to talk to the assembled congregation. This is the church of the former pastor, Reverend Jeremiah Wright, and his fiery rhetoric is what got Barack Obama playing defense for the last 2.5 months. So my first question would be, before we watch the tape, who at Trinity United Church of Christ, who selected Father Flager, the Roman Catholic priest, to come to talk to him? They had to know he was somewhat of a controversial figure, and yet they gave him a pulpit, they gave him a microphone, and they gave him worldwide exposure, and this is what the world has now seen.
Hillary was crying. And people said that was put on. I really don't believe it was put on. I really believe that she just always thought, this is mine. I'm Bill's wife. I'm white. And this is mine. I just got to get up and step into the plate. And then out of nowhere came, hey, I'm Barack Obama. And she said, oh, damn, where did you come from? I'm white. I'm entitled. There's a black man stealing my show. Yeah. wasn't the only one crying. There was a whole lot of white people crying.
That was Father Michael Flager, a longtime friend of Barack Obama. Brian Boyer,
I'm so appalled. I'm amazed he only got 3,000 hate letters. I think he's going to get another 27,000 more. I've never seen anybody, certainly never a religious figure, who managed to offend more people at the same time than Father Flager did. I don't know how he is going to be able to quell his beating heart, but at some point I think he ought to do as the Cardinal would like him to do, which is get out of Dodge City for a few weeks.
I want to ask Richard. Down. Richard, I asked the question before we watched the tape. Who at that church invited Father Flager to be there?
I'm not sure, but certainly it seems like a pastor-level type decision. So certainly it... it could have been the pastor, but I'm not sure. But I will tell you that his comments are reprehensible. They have no place coming from the pulpit. That has no place there. And he's offended a whole lot of decent Americans with his comments.
It's not just him. It's not just Father Flager. Throughout this whole thing, we've been all saying on TV or talk shows, Trinity United is a wonderful community. They've got amazing ministries. They do great things in the community. Did you see the reaction that he was getting?
Let me say this.
And that reaction is very troubling. And it is not Father Flager that's going to be a problem in the long run for Barack Obama when this is replayed in the fall election. It's not going to be Father Flager that is the problem. It's the reaction that he received.
It's certainly... beg the question is when this tape became on the internet, when it went on the internet, there certainly, in my opinion, it left Barack Obama with no other decision other than the one he made, and that is to resign from the church for 20 years. He said, this is not a decision I come to lightly, and it is one I make with some sadness. I am not denouncing the church, and I'm not interested in people who want me to denounce the church. He then added that the new pastor at Trinity and the church have been suffering from the attention that my campaign has focused on them. My question would be is, I still want to know, who invited Michael Flager to be there?
Well, whoever runs the church did. I mean, it's sad. It's sad that it happened. The comments are reprehensible. I think it's offensive. I think it was right to immediately apologize. I think Senator Obama was right to resign from the church because, frankly, a presidential campaign and how a church runs are kind of like oil and water. I mean, the fact that...
Is he going to be able to get behind this, beyond this, Daniel?
I think any fair-minded voter, after the senator said it's sad, but after resigning from this church, I think ascribing any action of anyone at that church to a possible presidential candidate is unfair. So I think for people that have a predisposition to judge against Senator Obama, they've got an excuse. But for somebody who's going to be fair, then yeah, I think he's going to be able to get.
Well, wait, what about events that took place before he resigned? What if more tape comes out about things that were said and reactions that took place during his 20 years there? I mean, nobody in America should come between anyone and their church. That's not the issue. The issue is, this is a person who is saying, I have the judgment to be president of the United States, to lead the free world. And yet I was in this church where these kinds of things were said, and I never wrote a letter to the pastor. I didn't serve on the parish council to say you shouldn't do that. He never had a prior statement.
That argument we're going to talk about in the next hour. But the other question I'm going to ask is, whoever invited Michael Flager to that church, in my view, was setting up Barack Obama.
Oh.
No question about
setting
it.
Setting him up.
That's where
no
right is.
No question about it.
And
on that note, we are out of time. Brian Boyer has been with us, along with Dan Weinberger, and also Chris Roebling, and Richard Boykin have all been with us in hour number one. We're going to keep the phone lines open at 1-800-723-8289. Another full hour if you're watching us on television. We'll see you next week. I'm Bruce Dumont. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415 for a one-time professional fee. American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go red.
To go red for women and give your heart the love it deserves.
My name is Teresa. I was a good mother. Then I tried meth and quickly became addicted. I abandoned my little girl to chase my next high. 8 months later, my daughter begged me to come home. Her plea made me enter drug treatment. My recovery wasn't easy, but I've been clean for 4 years now.
Meth is a powerful drug that affects everyone. If you know someone who's using, get involved. Treatment is available and it works. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
From Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Obama supporter Dan Johnson Weinberger, Clinton supporter Richard Boykin, McCain supporter Chris Roebling, and television documentarian Brian Boyer. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base on State Street, that great street in Chicago, where our phone lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, our email address is btbtalk@aol.com. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, www.beyondthebeltway.com. And we're going to continue our conversation, begun about Father Michael Flager, the Catholic priest from Chicago, who last week went to United Church at Trinity Church and gave quite a I don't want to say a sermon, quite a rant to the congregation, and it has caused so much controversy that Barack Obama has resigned from his church, having spent 20 years there. It's where he got married. His children were baptized there. He's talked about the former pastor there, Reverend Jeremiah Wright, as being his spiritual advisor. He also once referenced that Michael Flager was a spiritual advisor as well. And we had asked the question, and I want to come back to Richard Boykin, because we had asked the question, why would why would he be invited even to speak at that church when he had to know that Father Flager is a very controversial figure? This is important for people around the country to know. This is probably the most certainly controversial Catholic priest in Chicago. And he goes there to speak, and I don't know whether the topic of the speech or the sermon was supposed to have been cleared in advance. But why do you think it happened, Richard?
Well, I think
that whoever did it sandbagged Barack Obama.
Well, I think he was invited probably because he has a longstanding relationship with Trinity and with Pastor Wright and with the congregation. I mean, you know, Father Flager has done a number of good things throughout the city of Chicago. I mean, he's fought a good fight against banning advertising in African-American communities that, you know, tried to get people to drink more and that sort of thing, alcohol. And so, you know, he's done some good things. But I do think, Bruce, that the thing that he did last week was just a terrible disservice to Christianity and to him as an individual.
He said, this is what Michael Flager said in apologizing. I apologize for anyone who was offended and who thought it to be mockery. That was neither my intent nor was it in my heart. Well, if he didn't think that was mockery, does he not know the definition of mockery?
I have to tell you, there are lots of things he did wrong. One of the things that bothers me a lot is you have a white guy trying to act like a certain kind of black guy in front of an audience, and it's sort of Amos and Andy, and it's sort of off in every single way you can imagine. The tone of it's off. The intonations are off. He's not only mocking Hillary, he's mocking his congregation in a certain way, and he's mocking a heck of a lot of other people as well. He's standing, and he's essentially giving the bird to hundreds of millions of people.
So here's the question, and you have all been involved in political campaigns. What do you do when you have someone associated with the campaign who is a ticking time bomb? You know they're going to be a problem. And I'm talking about Wright. I'm talking about Father Flager. I mean, you got people out there. You don't want to throw people off the bus. But at some point, you've got to throw people off the bus. Let's get Daniel respond first.
I think the Obama campaign, you know, I think by a month ago, he was no longer an advisor to the Obama campaign talking about Father Flager. And I think what Barack did yesterday, the day before, about resigning from the church is what you have to do. That if part of, you know, somebody who supports you goes too far, you've got to cut those losses and move on. And I think he did that.
Chris Roebling.
Well, I think that Barack Obama never said publicly that Michael Flager is no longer my spiritual advisor or one of a cluster. I think that that's I missed that part.
Flager has contributed to his state senate campaigns.
Yeah, Flager has been a very strong supporter.
When he was a state senator, Obama helped get some state support for St. Sabinus, which has done a number of good things.
No question.
So that's part of the permanent record here.
Trinity United has done many good things, but the fact is that this shows the friends of Barack Obama to include individuals who are not ready for prime time. And these two, Reverend Wright and Mike Flager, are not the only two. And we're going to hear a lot more about a lot more of them. And there are names that we know as Chicagoans, and there are individuals who are cooperating with federal investigations as we speak today. And there are going to be more law enforcement consequences from that. Whether that comes out before the election in November, I'm not sure, we've got a lot more left to come out.
Has this, in every presidential campaign, and with anyone who ever becomes a national political figure, there are certain things that go into the permanent record. There are certain things that news media will be looking for, political opponents will be looking for, but they will be looking for things that reinforce an image of a candidate. You know, one was that George Bush isn't real bright. The other was that Jimmy Carter was a micromanager. Richard Nixon was a paranoid. Bill Clinton was a philanderer. I mean,
all those are true.
That's true. But here's my point: has the issue of wacky religious leaders and friends of Barack Obama, have they become the albatross around Obama's neck? And are these the stories that that Jay Leno and David Letterman are going to be mocking for 4 or even 8 years if he ever gets to be president?
Well, I think the reason why it's hard to imagine that to be true is that it's not like there aren't a score of wacky right-wing religious leaders, one of which Senator McCain's dealing with right now, who said absurd, ridiculous things about homosexuals and this reason
for Katrina.
But they're not.
You know, I know the Democrats like to bring that in. And again, we should say there have been wacky religious leaders on all sides,
right,
historically over the last 20 years. But this year, the problem is more of a Democratic problem because it's directly related and linked to the candidate, Dan.
So, I guess I'm repeating myself, but because it's been something that Republicans have dealt with for years and years, I just think most voters aren't willing to ascribe the motives or the management ability of a presidential candidate to their former pastors. I just don't think it's got the traction.
Let's look beyond wacky religious leaders and take a look at what we're really dealing with, the internet, and we're really dealing with little phones that take pictures. One of these days, and it'll be sooner than later, there are going to be some conservative Republicans who are close to McCain who are talking in the country club and making fun of somebody in some way, and somebody will shoot it and somebody will put it on the internet, and then people are going to say you have to cut your relations with the golf pro, or you have to cut your relations with the bank,
or you got to give up your membership in the country club.
We went through that 20 years ago. With Obama, if we're finished with talking about the wacky religious leaders,
you know what, we're not finished talking about them, but we do have to pause. 1-800-723-8289. We're going to not only come back to them, we got lots of callers. They come into the conversation when we come back. I'm Bruce Dumont from Chicago.
You've heard the horror stories about meth. It's a powerful, dangerous, and highly addictive drug that's having a serious impact on our communities and horrible effects on families across the country. But there is reason for hope. Treatment for meth addiction is available, and it works. All it takes is someone to care. If you know someone using meth, get involved and help them get on the path to recovery. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go red.
To go red for women and give your heart the love it deserves.
From Sioux Falls, South Dakota to San Francisco, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. We have lots of callers. Let's go to Fairfax, Virginia. Deborah is listening to us on XM Radio, POTUS 130. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi, just 2 points. Number one, the conversation about Obama running a brilliant campaign. I can't see that. I think that Obama didn't have to do very much because I think the media helped him all the way through. I don't think he had much strategy. Had to have much strategy. Number two, though.
Let me just interject for a moment because I was the one that said it. I said I thought the campaign was flawless up until the Jeremiah Wright controversy broke, and I think that it sort of went off its wheels for a while. And I think notwithstanding what the media has done for Barack Obama, I think that you have to hand it to him that he has done an incredible job, a history-making job, in his ability to raise money. Mm-hmm. And just that alone is what thrust him into the success that he's had thus far. It isn't all media hype that has him where he is today.
And Deborah, to follow up, the money has been raised by regular people kicking in 20 or 50 bucks. That's extraordinary that 1.5 million people have done that. And no TV show and no newspaper editorial is going to make somebody give their money to a political campaign.
Well, go ahead, Deborah, you're next.
On that point, I give that point to you. But the other point that I just wanted to make is that poor Obama is, people are saying he's been sabotaged and people are out to get him. Nobody chose Obama's friends. He chose those friends.
Right.
He put himself in
exactly
this position.
Right. Exactly.
And it is his problem. And how many people can you denounce and how many people can you distance yourself from before somebody gets a clue that this
But Deborah, you know what? You're correct in one respect, but in a political campaign, if you are friends with someone who's running for president of the United States, and you know that the spotlight and the heat lamp is on your friend or your alleged friend, you don't go to a church in the internet world and give the speech that Father Flager gave. You don't do it to your friends. If you're a true friend and you're Reverend Wright, you don't go to the National Press Club and act like a fool. You don't do that. You should be smart enough, and Father Flager and Reverend Wright are smart enough to know in this media world, they know that what comes out of their mouth is going to be affixed to their candidate.
But you're putting the spotlight on Flager and Reverend Wright
their friendship. Their true friendship with Barack Obama. You don't do that to friends. They're smarter.
That's true, but
they should be smarter than that.
That's true, but that we don't care about them. They're not running for president. What we care about is the friendship that Obama has had with these unsavory people, and that goes to judgment and
that's
who we are.
That's a valid point. That is a valid point. Chris,
thank
you were nodding your head in agreement or disagreement?
Thank you, Deborah, for bringing that point to bear. And yes, I agree. And if you're upset, if we're finished talking with the nutty religious people, we can talk about the domestic terrorists because we've got Bernadine Dorn, you know, and that whole crew and those people that
Bill Ayers
is, he's chosen to become friends and supporters in a mutual admiration society with people who wanted to blow things up.
Mobile, Alabama is the place. Also listening to us on XM Radio. Reginald, go ahead.
Yes, sir. I like to bring this out, I'm not endorsing any candidate, but I was here thinking about children that would go to a school, you know, basically, that would endure peer pressure or get different people around that have different views. You can't necessarily judge that individual because of the people that they're surrounded by. That doesn't mean that that's the type of spirit or that's their nature because of someone else's opinion or views. And then sometimes you can have friends for years and still not know them. And then when you're dealing with a church situation, some people go to church maybe once every 3, 4, 5 months. They may attend,
and still might not know the pastor. I've known people that have attended churches for years, and then eventually they leave those churches because there's a disagreement or there's a church split. But you can't really judge a person's character by people that they're being nice to or they associate with, because we all associate with different people, and we learn them over a period of time. So I'm not endorsing anyone, but I just wanted to share that and bring that out. Thank you so much.
Okay.
You know, there is something that's very interesting comment. Here. The previous caller talked about, used the word unsavory friends. I don't think that Reverend Wright is unsavory, and I don't think that Father Flager is unsavory. I don't think that's the case at all. I think you have people who are carried away, who said things they might have said in private that ended up being in public, and then Barack Obama is tarred with that brush. You know, politics is a rough, rough business, and people ascribe all kinds of traits to people that aren't necessarily true. And unsavory.
I think unsavory includes Bill.
Incorrect.
That's Bill Ayers. I agree with you about the reverends. It's Bill Ayers. It's Bernadine. It's Tony Resco. It's the convicted fraudster Iraqi billionaire who financed the purchase of the Barack Obama house.
Yeah,
those are the unsavory people.
Now, let me say this, and I'm a Clinton supporter, but, you know, friend, it's unfair to really attack Senator Obama for some of the associations that he's had when there's nothing that's come forward that suggested that somehow he's been tainted by this. I mean, you mentioned Tony Resco. I mean, he's been mentioned throughout the campaign, but there's not even a conviction in that case yet. And there's nothing that's come forward that suggested that Senator Obama, other than his own statement that it was poor judgment to purchase that plot of land.
Tony Resco, let me give you one. I appreciate what you're saying. Let me talk
quick
about Tony
answer,
Resco.
Quick answer, and then we're going to go back to calls.
Barack Obama has not had one answer about Tony Resco, not two, not three. Barack Obama took four answers
to
get to the answer about how much money Tony Resco actually raised for Barack Obama's campaign. And I'm not going to say that he was knowingly fibbing on answers one, two, and three, but he said, I will tell you it's about, I don't know, whatever the number, 15 grand, no more, maybe a little bit, not much.
Dan Johnson Weinberger,
now over $250,000.
I've got it. This continued.
Weinberger to close.
The continued ad hominem attacks is a prime example of the smallness of our politics that Chris and the Republicans seem to be advancing, which is why people are attracted to the Obama campaign, is that we can move beyond this petty, petulant smallness and get to solving problems that people are having.
We are going to Roland in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, listening to us on KELO. Nice to hear from South Dakota tonight.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you this evening?
Fine. How are you? Thank you for calling.
Hey, thank you. I got to say, you know, this is one of the few shows I will listen to that I really respect all of your opinions. It's a nice array of different supporters and different ideologies, but
thank you. That's the goal. We were fair and balanced before the idea of the Fox News Channel was a glint in Roger Ailes' eyes.
Well, I got to hand it to you guys. I really do.
Thank you.
Just a real quick thing. I'm a Reagan conservative. I've voted for years. This is one year where I will set it out. John McCain is a rhino. John McCain is saying a lot of stuff right now. He's not saying enough to placate his base. He's kind of forgetting about his base, and he's talking about, global warming and all this other stuff. And I think he's just continuously alienating his base. One thing I want to say, whether it's Hillary, whether it's Barack, or whether it's John, how they are now distancing themselves from, if you want to say, the unsavory friends they've had in the past. I think sensible people know that it's just for political expediency. It doesn't change the fact these guys have had these friends. Just because they're distancing themselves from them now doesn't mean anything to me. They've still been friends with them. They've still hobnobbed with them.
Well, let me ask you a quick one. If you are not if you're a Republican not attracted to McCain, are you at all tempted by Bob Barr, the Libertarian candidate for president?
No, I'm not. I've always liked Bob Barr, but I don't think he has a chance. Ron Paul, we've got Ron Paul stickers all over in South Dakota. He won't get my vote. I'm just disgusted with the fact that the three people we have to vote for, it comes back to the old joke I heard, and it's a very clean joke. If there was a sinking ship going down and Barack and Hillary and John were on the boat, who would be saved? We all would. I mean, it's amazing the what it's come to. I thought John would have been voted out of the primaries a long time ago, because all he's done is poke his finger in the eyes of the Republican Party for years, and now he expects everyone to hop on his boat.
All right, listen, Roland, I thank you very much for your call. Thank you very much for your comments. We appreciate it. By the way, on the Bob Barr thing, it's interesting about Bob Barr. Longtime congressman from Georgia, now is seeking the Libertarian nomination for president.
He got it.
And he got it.
Yeah.
The point is, in if he wins double digits, if he can get double digits out of Georgia, he can flip Georgia to the Democrats. I mean, that's the importance of Bob Barr this campaign. And I'm not so sure that's not beyond the possibility, because I think there are more conservative Republican voters who believe as Roland did. We do have to pause. 1-800-723-8029. I'm Bruce Dumont. Back shortly from Chicago. More calls. We got a full board. You'll hear them all when we come back.
I think the important...
When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415. For a one-time professional fee, American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415. We'll be right back. From Fairfax, Virginia to Tallahassee, Florida, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Dan Johnson Weinberger is with us. He is an attorney,
yep.
But you don't practice.
It's election
lobbyist. You're election, y'all.
A little bit here.
You're a progressive lobbyist.
Yep.
All-around good guy.
I appreciate that.
And you went to the University of Chicago.
And one of my professors was the next president of the United States, Barack Obama.
And did he give you a good grade?
He did. He taught me voting
rights.
Oh,
now we know while you're here flacking for the
it's
guy.
Payback. It's payback
time.
So you've got a job in the administration, probably.
I like to imagine that I do, but I think that's fantasy. Yeah.
So you could become a national political figure, and you'll certainly remember that you got your start on this program.
Every Sunday, I will fly back to Chicago if I am ever with any clout whatsoever. If you did,
I heard it. Yeah.
You got witnesses. Say that again.
If there is ever any call I get from Bruce DeMond. If I get any more clout than I have today, which is unlikely, but if it ever does happen, I will answer the call and do whatever you ask me to do at any time.
What a wonderful thing. Now, if only Rahm Emanuel had said that. Also joining, because he once upon a time was a regular on this program for many, many years when no one knew who he was, and now he doesn't return phone calls. Richard Boykin is here. Richard Boykin is the Clinton supporter this evening, and for many years he was the chief of staff for Congressman Danny Davis, representing the west side of Chicago, and is now an attorney in private practice. Brian Boyer is with us. He's a noted television documentarian. He has worked for the Republicans and Democrats and independents. He was one of the press secretaries to the first African-American mayor of Chicago, Harold Washington, and his most recent documentary was on retirement for PBS. You probably saw it. It was a two-part, one-hour special hosted by Paula Zahn. And I'm sure Brian wrote every word that she spoke. And also this evening is Chris Roebling. Once upon a time, he was the executive director of the Cook County Republican Party and a longtime Republican activist. Once upon a time, originally a Democrat.
That's right.
And you are now a crisis communications expert.
Well, consultant.
People who are in trouble. And if people are in trouble, they're your client base.
That's right.
And we've been talking about Barack Obama. We've been talking about Father Flager. We've been talking about all the controversies. A question, and before we go back to calls, and we do have a lot of calls. Barack Obama has resigned from his church after 20 years, Trinity United Church of Christ in Chicago. He can't just put this behind him by resigning, can he, Chris? Because you're not going to let him.
No, we're not. No. It's going to keep coming up. It's going to keep coming up. And I want to say, it's much beyond the concern expressed by Dan. We want to talk about how Barack wants to raise taxes. We want to talk about how Barack wants to put a stone on any idea of creating new energy or drilling for new oil in the United States. He wants to keep those energy prices up. And Barack Obama had just now, 10 days ago, a great opportunity to align himself with the consumers and oppose the farm bill like John McCain did. And, of course, he voted to continue the shoveling out to special interests.
Let's go to calls. Let's go to Ron in Kalamazoo, Michigan, listening to us on WLS. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. Thank you. It's been 50 minutes, so I'm glad I got on here. I spent 30 years in an auto plant, and I guess I'm one of those white workers. And I think that this whole discussion going on, who's friends with whom and whose relationships with who from the past, every one of those candidates will have lots of videos and lots of discussion. I think the challenge is, and this is what I hear in the plant all the time, or I'd like to hear, I shouldn't say hear, I'd like to hear, is that Hillary Clinton begin to say, how do we address the fact that there is a race issue in America? How does she begin, who says she wants to be president and wants to support and respect Barack Obama, begin to say white workers need to change some of the consciousness as well as come to and break down the labels and the categories, which is what Barack Obama talked about in that Philadelphia speech. I was amazed at how many white workers had their kids listen to that speech in Philadelphia on CNN. You know, and I think the challenge for the media and for the candidates is to talk about where we're going and not play this game of who's friends with whom and all which video is hot that week. That's what leadership is. And I'm outraged that we're going to allow first George Wallace to determine the election, then Ronald Reagan Democrats, and now McCain Democrats to determine the election because we don't want to deal with the history in this country. And we finally have a chance to deal with that history. So I urge and beg and plead that leadership who's trying to run for president begin to talk about healing this country rather than the same old categories we've had for years and years.
Ron, stay on the line. Can you stay on the line for us?
I can stay on the line.
Good, because I want to ask you the question. If Hillary Clinton is the person who should have this conversation, and she should have the conversation with many of the blue-collar Democrats who are supporting her, and the media has really they have looked at this divide within the Democratic electorate, and they did so in the wake of the first comment that was uttered by Bill Clinton when he really was the first person to bring race into this discussion, at least in my view. And my question to you is Hillary Clinton the right person to have that discussion? Because at this moment, it seems to me that she is benefiting politically from not having this discussion.
Oh, there's no question she's benefiting by not having this discussion. That's precisely why.
So who leads the discussion then?
Well, I think it's the responsibility of everybody to take up where Barack Obama raised it in Philadelphia. And anybody who doesn't is dooming this country to more of Bush and more of the same old categories that keep us divided.
So I agree with that. Stay on the line. Stay on the line.
Okay.
Ron, so are you suggesting this? Let's assume, and I know Richard doesn't want to share this assumption, but for purpose of this discussion, let's assume that in the next week, you know, the two primaries are done, enough superdelegates move over to Barack that he clinches. Are you suggesting then the best gesture that Senator Clinton could make is to say that for those supporters who may, and there's at least a few, that said, I won't vote for Barack because he's black. And there are a few people like that.
They don't say it, but they may mean it.
Right. There's certainly a few. That this is a phenomenal moment to say now's the time to finally put to bed that old way of thinking. Address it forthrightly. Is that what you're suggesting, Ron? That this would be a fantastic moment for Senator Clinton?
It's a fantastic moment to listen to the children, our children and our grandchildren, who are saying that it's time to get beyond the categories and the division that have prevented us from talking as a nation about race and about where we need to go.
Because
we're stuck 40 years ago.
Because there is still white privilege. We can all acknowledge that's true, right? And part of moving beyond is having an honest discussion about it, right?
Can there be, I said when he gave the Philadelphia speech, that Barack Obama is uniquely qualified to lead that discussion. Now, I don't believe it's realistic that you can lead that discussion in the course of a political campaign, because political campaigns are about advantage and advancement. Once the campaign is over, if he were to become president of the United States, I think that he could lead that discussion.
Let me just say something, please, because I think it's the responsibility of all these unions who say they represent white workers.
Yes.
To talk about this discussion, because if they think that they are going to win the election for the Democratic Party because four more years means four more Bush, McCain is just another four more years of Bush, they're mistaken. If they don't change the consciousness and the thinking and engage in a civil conversation about transforming sort of the values, I mean, why Barack Obama captured so much imagination, if they miss that boat, they'll be left behind again.
Brian Boyer's got a comment, and then I want Chris, and then we'll go back to you.
Well, American politics for the past 30 years has certainly been about division, not about unification. The great hope would be, at least for the Democrats, is that this election somehow can get back to the question of unification. If that's successful, if that's possible, the Democrats will win the presidency. Unfortunately, right now, the way things are going is the division may be stronger than that, and you could end up with a continuation of what's tragically Republican misrule for the last 8 years.
Well, the 60s burst of civil rights legislation was passed by a coalition that was built on the Republican Party in the United States Senate. And there are no 3, 4, or 15 different ways about it. That is a historic fact. And I think that Barack Obama's Philadelphia speech was opportunistic and strategic. And I think you're right. He's not the right person to lead this. And I was very disappointed in the way he reverted from the right issue, from the Reverend Wright issue, which is about division. And then he said, now what we need is reconciliation and not really dealing with the pattern of division that existed in his own background. I think he's flawed in that regard. I don't think he's going to get beyond that in this campaign. He might get beyond it in life.
But who else is going to lead that discussion?
I think that
he
it's,
has that
I think
opportunity.
That I completely agree with Ron. Caller has made the right point. And the right point is we need that racial conversation to be conducted and to be finished and to be concluded with transformation. To talk like a UCC person, transformation that leads to reconciliation, okay, based on liberation, okay? And that is the tradition from which Barack originally came. That's what we need. I think that it's going to have to be bigger than a political candidate trying to save his campaign, bigger than a party, bigger than a campaign for public office. It's got to be societal. Because we got into this societally.
You're talking about something that's not realistic if it can't be dealt with in a political campaign. This is a system that has no other way of dealing with it. And let's not...
You can deal with it.
Can I say something?
Yes. Last word to you. Go ahead, Ron.
Okay. Whoever just said it's not realistic, it's that attitude that will drive us continued backwards, never allow us to get beyond the absurdity of why people don't give a damn about what's going on. And finally, people are caring and getting involved, and I have to wait 50 minutes to talk on your show because care. And for you to say it's not realistic, we need a politics that gets beyond what you call realistic.
I agree.
Okay, listen, we got to move on. Listen, thanks very much. And I don't think you waited 50 minutes, but you know what? You had your piece, and you used your time very well. I'm Bruce Dumont. Back shortly.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
From Birmingham, Alabama to Bakersfield, California, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, and Richard Boykin from the supporting Hillary Clinton has a comment.
Thanks, Bruce. I agree with my Republican friend when he talks about that society really has to begin to lead this discussion on the issue of race in America. The reality of it is that within our churches, we have a structure that can really begin to lead this dialogue. And, of course, you can look to people like John Lewis, one of the great voices of the civil rights movement, and one of the great men of history today. Obviously, he switched his vote from Senator Clinton to Senator Obama. But he's a man of value, and he's a man that people listen to and that they respect. And so I think if you get like-minded people who really want to deal with the issue of race in America, I think we can get it done through churches, through people like John Lewis and others who have credibility.
Okay. Brian, my point was that, you know, you talked about that it should happen in the course of a political campaign. At the beginning of this campaign, we were amazed, and certainly the media was talking about the fact that Barack Obama was doing extremely well, picking up white votes in states that were overwhelmingly white. That was the story. The story changed when Bill Clinton changed the story. When Bill Clinton brought up the race issue, realizing that that was going to be the way to slow Barack Obama down, slow the fundraising down, slow everything down. That is what has created the climate we are in today. And it's a climate that if it is not adeptly handled, because we now have one wing, one element of the party, the coalition of strong African-American support for the party and blue-collar voters and women and others, that Democratic coalition, if you don't bring it together, the party is not going to succeed. But in doing so, in my view, the debate has ripped open the sore of race relations, and it's going to be impossible to put it back in the bottle if it is not handled very adeptly. And that's why I mentioned at the beginning of the show, the idea that Hillary Clinton may have fought and clawed her way on that ticket, I think is a reality. The great challenge now, in my view, as to whether the pieces of the party can be put back together, which really does not concern me as an American as much as putting the country back together again so the country can have this serious discussion. I think the great challenge at the moment is not with Barack Obama. The great challenge is for Hillary Clinton. Can she, with her rhetoric and her leadership, can she undo all of the consternation and all of the angst and anger and bitterness that has been stirred up in the course of winning this campaign, much of it going back to the mouth of her husband? That's going to be the great challenge. She is the one that's going to have to rise to the occasion. And you made the point, or Rahm Emanuel made the point, that it's the person who finishes second in the primary that's going to determine the success of the party. I think that's right. And I think the only person that really can put the genie back in the bottle is Hillary Clinton, and she's got to do it. But I think the stakes are a lot higher than just winning the Democratic nomination, because a reality is that if this time comes and goes for black Americans and Barack Obama is dismissed from the political scene, I don't think there's ever going to be a black president of the United States. It will never happen. The conditions will never be the same as they are today. And some might argue is maybe Barack Obama isn't, black enough. Well, that was the early part of the campaign. Now some people saying he's too black. The reality is that from where he came, he is in a unique position to really, he's had 2 feet. He's had a foot in each culture, if you will. And he's the only one that I think can really bring the country together in an extensive long-term way. And again, if his time comes and goes this time, there will never be a black president of the United States.
He'll
never be a serious candidate.
I disagree, Bruce, because I don't think that we can ever say never, and I don't think that anybody ever anticipated that Senator Obama would be in this position to clinch this nomination. And so, I do think that he has really opened the eyes up of a lot of Americans to the possibility of an African-American president. And so I think there are other talent that's down the line that could possibly surface within the next, within our lifetime, and possibly become president of the United States. So I disagree with the notion that if Barack Obama does not succeed, there will never be an African-American president in our lifetime.
And I guess I would just say, as a country, we should be proud that aside from Appalachia, there hasn't been really an anti-black vote that's been perceived. I think there's they call it the sort of Appalachia problem, that for whatever reason, the Obama campaign's not attracting as many white votes as we like. Outside of that region...
Well, this is, if you're talking about the Appalachia problem, West Virginia, is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, that whole swath of the country.
They elected, former member of the Ku Klux Klan to the Senate for 6 times, maybe that...
But most of the country isn't burdened by that. And that's a sign of progress, I think.
I think the country has been burdened by Bob Byrd for a long time. Michelle in Gurnee, Illinois, you're on the air.
Hi. I have to disagree with you, too, that it will never happen. The problem with all three candidates, in my opinion, is that they're liberal. The problem is not black, half white. The funny thing is the Democrats invented political correctness, and now it's coming back to bite them. They don't want a discussion about race. They need race problems to exist.
And yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot
to that. And that's a dirty, dark secret, and I think that's terrible.
I think there's a lot to that. I think that the Democratic, the structure of the party, unfortunately, when it lost touch with the people in the precincts and started listening to all of the sort of experts and interest groups, the transformation of the party, which drove me out of the party, is now having its kind of culmination. This is what a lot of us said in the early 70s might happen. And I don't know what's going to happen in November, but what we have seen so far is what a lot of people predicted when these reforms, so-called,
were made.
But
these are phenomenal things. This has been a phenomenal campaign. This is great.
It has been a phenomenal show.
Yeah.
Our thanks this evening to our guests. Dan Johnson Weinberger is here. He has been a supporter and is a supporter of Barack Obama. Brian Boyer is the noted television documentarian. Also joining us this evening, we have Chris Roebling, who is our Republican. He supports John McCain. And Richard Boykin, he supports Hillary Rodham Clinton. This program is a Genevieve production, produced in association with WLS Talk Radio and Wilbur Entertainment. Our thanks to Tom Veracruz and Stephanie Lecce for their assistance in the production of this program. Until next week at the same time, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415 for a one-time professional fee. American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go Red!
To Go Red for Women and give your heart the love it deserves.
My name is Teresa. I was a good mother. Then I tried meth and quickly became addicted. I abandoned my little girl to chase my next high. 8 months later, my daughter begged me to come home. Her plea made me enter drug treatment. My recovery wasn't easy, but I've been clean for 4 years now.
Meth is a powerful drug that affects everyone. If you know someone who's using, get involved. Treatment is available and it works. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.